This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. In a time where opportunities have been tough to get applicants for many jobs, in particular for law enforcement jobs, many of the Northwest Indiana police departments are partnering these days, in this case with Indiana University Northwest and the Crossroads YMCA, to help set up workshops to help get people prepared for being able to apply for jobs. And with us, one of the participants in the program, which is coming up on Saturday, Griffith Police Chief Greg Mance is with us to talk more about it. And Chief Mance, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Morning. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
Well, I know it's always interesting to have opportunities to learn more about law enforcement if you are interested in such a career and you want to be able to do it the right way. And there are certain procedures that one has to follow in applying for and certainly going through training if you are accepted with a department. And I know this workshop in particular, you say this is the fourth annual one coming up?
Yeah, it hasn't quite been annual, but every couple of years we've been hosting this along with our partners over at IUN, Center for Urban and Regional Excellence, and the Crossroads YMCA. So we're excited about getting this one out. We were sidelined last year. We tried to put it out, but the pandemic slowed us a bit. But we have it scheduled for this Saturday. Registration still open. It closes tomorrow, Wednesday at midnight. And so far, we've got a great response, so we're pretty excited about it.
That's great to hear. What do people seem to find is an obstacle, if it is can be called that, in the law enforcement testing and selection process to be able to get a job with a police department someplace?
Sure. Well, many agencies, we don't have that much of a turnover in this region. We're fortunate in that regard. So oftentimes, we find that we just have one or two openings, and you have, in the past, approximately, 80 to 100 people applying for the position. So it can be very discouraging when you go through this very long and in-depth testing process and you don't make that top 1 or 2% and you don't get hired.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing many great candidates, ones that law enforcement is particularly interested in bringing into law enforcement, whether they be minority or females. Perhaps this was one of their earlier first attempts at going through a process like this. And, they didn't get hired, and perhaps they got discouraged and never came back for further testing. So the goal of this workshop is for everybody, but just to improve everyone's chance of performing at their very best with this testing process and not to get discouraged, not to be intimidated by the process, because it is intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
The interviews that we do, in Griffith at least, is a group panel interview. So, these applicants are paired up with four other applicants being asked questions, identical questions, by five panelists. So it's very intimidating, a very unique process that isn't really duplicated very often in the public field for entry-level positions. But it's put there for a purpose. It's put there to put the applicant under a certain level of stress to make sure that they can communicate in those stressful situations, because obviously in law enforcement, communication is one of our best and most used tools.
I know you can only speak primarily for the Griffith Department, but that seems to be the issue, to find the right person that certainly would be a good applicant and a good candidate for being a police officer.
Yeah, it's always challenging. We always want to find the very best. Right now, it's even more difficult. The law enforcement field has always been very challenging, and I think most people who come into this profession have a sense of a calling for it. And in recent events and recent years, I think we've had a harder time really bringing in the very best and the numbers that we like to see to kind of go through a pool. Oftentimes, if we have 100 applicants, by the very end of our process, we're really looking at about 20 of those 100. Oftentimes, we've come into an issue where people are still they don't have good driving records, they've got a criminal history,
mm-hmm.
or they are still doing drugs while they're in the hiring process. And obviously, you want the very best character applying for these positions and getting hired. So it is a challenge for just about every department, including Griffith.
Now, for the Prepare to Serve and Protect workshop that is coming up on Saturday at the Griffith YMCA, there are going to be a number of topics I know you'll have an opportunity to cover with people that show up and like to learn more. What are some of the topics, aside from learning how to be able to participate and react in a group interview, like you mentioned in the case of what's done at the Griffith Police Department.
Yeah, so we're oftentimes we find that, you know, you have to be 21 or older to be a police officer, 21 to 40 now in the state of Indiana. So we often find that candidates who maybe didn't go to college, maybe went to the military or went in, right into it, another entry-level position, they haven't taken any kind of written exam in many years, or they were never really taught how to take a test. So our faculty from IUN will be providing test-taking tips. You know, oftentimes you can improve your chances when you're dealing with a multiple-choice question just by eliminating the obvious. And while that might seem like a pretty easy thing to figure out, it's something that many test takers in the stress of the moment don't recognize and don't take advantage of that test-taking method. So that'll be covered. We'll also go over interview preparation tips. We find that in the interviews that we have, people often come ill-prepared. Either they don't dress in a professional manner, they don't present themselves correctly, or they don't really highlight the many skills that they do have. They think that, you know, I didn't have a job that was pre-law enforcement. You know, I wasn't in corrections. I wasn't a police dispatcher. But, you know, perhaps they work in customer service, and they're very good at dealing with conflict. Those type of candidates often don't recognize their own skills and don't give those during the interview process. So that's something that we really drill on. And then after the interview preparation tips, we actually give them the mock interview that I spoke of.
Mm-hmm.
And then following that, the physical agility portion, the state mandates that every applicant pass a certain entry-level standard physical agility. So we have our partners from Crossroads YMCA as well as several law enforcement officials from our region will be actually showing candidates what to expect, whether it's the sit-ups, the push-ups, the vertical leap, the run. It's just giving them an opportunity to actually go through those to show them, hey, this is the level you need to get to, and this is how to improve, you know, your sit-ups or push-ups, wherever they're deficient, to make sure they make that standard. Because, again, oftentimes when we've done these testing processes in the past, the applicants would come in and they would fall short by one or two push-ups or one or two sit-ups. And it was just heartbreaking because they've done so well and then they couldn't complete that. And if they just maybe had prepared a little bit more and given some guidance on what to expect, they would have performed well and gotten to that next step in our hiring process.
Now, have you all found that in the series of workshops that you've conducted already that it's turned out to get some feedback from people who attended, participated in the workshops, and perhaps they've gotten back to you and say, hey, I went through all this, I learned a lot, and it got me a job. I'm now a police officer in some police department here in Northwest Indiana, maybe even yours there in Griffith.
Yes, we have had success. We one of the very first workshops, actually the very first workshop that we did, we hired a female candidate who became our second female police officer in our department.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very successful, and I know several officers who've gone to other agencies, whether it be the state police, other region municipalities. So it has been successful, and our partners at IUN, at the end of every one of our workshops, they conduct a survey, and it's almost always unanimous that everyone that goes through the workshop feels that they've benefited greatly from the event.
Now, Chief Mance, will you go through again the procedure if you're interested in attending the Prepare to Serve and Protect workshop this Saturday at the Griffith YMCA? What does one have to do, and what should you be prepared for if you do attend?
Yeah, again, I welcome anyone who even has a slight interest in law enforcement to attend this workshop. It'll be this Saturday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Griffith YMCA, which is at 1345 North Broad Street. It's just south of Ridge Road at the intersection of Broad Street. To participate, though, you need to make sure you register by midnight tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
The easiest way to find a link would be to go to the Griffith Police Department Facebook page or our website, and we have links there that will take you to the YMCA registration portal. You don't have to be a YMCA member, but we do use their portal. There is a $15 fee for going to this workshop, and that covers a T-shirt and some other supplies that we'll be giving out that day as far as some snacks and some waters. So it's a unique opportunity, and an opportunity that we try to present to our region every couple of years. This year, partnering with us, we have the Lake County Sheriff's Department. They're going to have their deputy warden there talking about some opportunities that exist within the jail to kind of build up experience for these candidates when they do apply for law enforcement jobs, if that's their career goal. Indiana Harbor Belt Railroad's going to be there. NCTI, or the South Shore Railroad Police, will be there. Munster PD and Portage PD will all have officials there to speak a little bit about their departments, their future hiring processes, and then just to give their expertise to the candidates about successfully passing this workshop.
Rick Vance is the Griffith Police Chief, talking about this weekend's Prepare to Serve and Protect workshop that is going to be held on Saturday at the Griffith YMCA. If you're interested, apply right now. Go online to do so. And Chief Vance, thank you for telling us the latest about this next in the series of workshops. And let's hope that you come up with some successful candidates, or certainly some people that maybe were interested in law enforcement. They've learned more from attending the workshops, and it's helped propel them into some career that will certainly benefit the community as well. Thank you very much for being with us today.
It's always a pleasure, Mr. Schnolte. Take care.
As nursing students gear up to return to school this fall, one college is preparing them for a more stressful work environment than they could ever have imagined. Side Effects Public Media's Stephanie Whitesides has a report.
The COVID-19 pandemic has been stressful on everyone, but healthcare workers may be affected more than anyone. Some nurses are burnt out and planning to leave the profession. Meanwhile, colleges are preparing new graduates to take their place and deal with the pressures of the job. Side Effects Public Media's Stephanie Whiteside reports.
Heather Hampson works at John A. Logan College in Southern Illinois, helping to train the next generation of nurses. I spoke with Hampson and her colleagues in the empty nursing lab, where teaching dummies lay in gurneys next to IV stands and crash carts. She says the pandemic brought a lot of attention to the profession, and that motivates students.
Most people look at this nurses and all healthcare providers as heroes through this pandemic. So I think that it encourages them and energizes them and motivates them to want to select this career path.
At the community college, instructors use labs and dummies to give students hands-on learning. The pandemic changed that, forcing students into online classes for a while. Hampson says that actually helped working students who worried about being quarantined and missing classes.
Many of them work in healthcare now, and so they would be they would have high exposures. So the fact that we were able to offer our classes in that setting so that they didn't miss any school was a great way to alleviate some of that stress and help them be successful.
Elena Novelli was studying to become a registered nurse. She was already working as an LPN, which became emotionally difficult during the pandemic.
It is very stressful, especially to watch residents die that have been in the facility for a long time and you've grown a strong connection with. It has been mentally exhausting and physically exhausting.
Throughout the pandemic, instructors did their best to continue essential hands-on training. Instructor Aaron McGuire says clinical work is essential for students.
Hopefully they were able to see what acute care is like in the moment, rather than maybe waiting until after they graduate before they see their first real patient.
Hampson says students also worked with local health departments.
And they gave over 30,000 immunizations in the last few weeks. I feel like that helped spin it so that they felt more in control and had this positive effect on our community.
McGuire says seeing what it's like to work as a nurse, including the stress of dealing with COVID, can help students choose the right path for them.
And I think when people saw the nurses who are out there on the front line and how tired they are and the struggles that they were having, you know, just doing their job in a pandemic, I think some of them at least took a hard look at it and really had to do some self-reflection and see, is this really what I want to do?
Even some practicing nurses are involved in that reflection. A survey done last December found nearly 1 in 4 nurses were planning to leave bedside care or the profession. Learning to handle the pressures of their job is part of the nursing education at Logan. Instructor Kristen Yersenovich says self-care is key.
It is very, very important that as a nurse, you cannot care for others if you cannot care for yourself. So putting yourself first at some times, having positive coping mechanisms and outlets is number one in priority to giving care to others.
Hampson encourages students to eat well, exercise, and find time for activities like yoga or reading. For Novelli, the pandemic resulted in new habits to shake off the stress of work and school.
So that took me a while to get a hang of, but actually at the beginning of the COVID, I picked up running, and then I got into the gym a lot. Just having healthy habits and something that I could go and take my anger and frustration out at, the gym was really the place.
Despite the pandemic, staff say none of the students quit the program, and they've seen even more people consider enrolling. Andrew Biley, a student, says quitting wasn't an option for him.
Mentally, the biggest thing is it's scary. If you have the right amount of fear, it gives you the drive to do the best you can. Quitting's a very easy thing, but I think I used it to motivate me to just continue and finish, and it helped me become better than I ever would have been.
For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Steph Whiteside.
The region's newest gaming palace is getting well established in supporting the community it is in and those surrounding it as well. Matt Shuford is the general manager of Hard Rock Casino, Northern Indiana, in Gary. I spoke with him after the latest philanthropic move that the casino made, donating to the Salvation Army in Lake County. And he talks first about the increases in revenue that they've seen since opening in May.
It's been a little over 90 days. Well, we opened middle of May, and things couldn't have gone better. We're so proud of the team, so proud of all the hard work that they've done. But certainly the guest feedback has been incredibly strong. Visitation's been strong. In only our second full month of operation, we led the state of Indiana in table games business, so the amount wagered and the amount won. So pretty happy from that perspective, and we're looking forward to continued growth.
Now, how have you seen the growth been with the new casino compared to having the two Majestic Star boats, which of course been phased out?
Yeah, we're obviously doing a significant amount more business than those two boats were doing when they were opened. We obviously have a great property and a great location with a great brand. But one of the things that we're seeing, which is great, is we're growing the market. You know, our competitors are still doing very well, which is good for everybody and good for the state. And we're certainly proud of the amount of revenue we're seeing thus far.
When it was time to get things set up, and after the official opening in May, it was a soft start, I guess, as you could say, I guess, to have the things open up as people started coming in. Slowly, did the attendance at the casino finally build after the initial rush of the official opening?
Yes, it did. Obviously, we had a lot of people who wanted to come check us out that opening weekend.
Right.
And then, after that, things continue to build from that point in time. And we're continuing to see a lot of folks, particularly on the weekends, as we're a casino that's built for a regional type of customer. And they have time on the weekends to visit us. We're seeing a lot of folks who don't necessarily gamble but want to come out for a great meal, great entertainment, to have a good time, coming out to see us on the weekends. So it's continuing to build, and we're very happy with that.
Did you figure on in building everything together before the opening that the mere curiosity seekers were going to be the first ones to come out? They may not hit the table games, so they may not hit the machines, but they're going to come out and certainly look around.
Yeah, for sure. You know, folks are going to come out and they kick the tires a little bit just to see what Hard Rock was all about. That's expected when you open up a new facility like this, a new casino, in a market where gaming's been around for close to 30 years. So certainly, and our job was to provide them with the greatest experience possible to get them to come back.
Yeah. Now, we're speaking, as you finished up another visit, in this case to the Salvation Army, offering some funds to help the Salvation Army. I know that's been one of the things that the casino has been very busy doing is getting around to the community, the organizations in the communities that help people out and showing that you want to be a good neighbor. You may be new to the neighborhood, so to speak, but you want to be a good neighbor.
Sure. You know, Hard Rock, one of their core values is obviously to be a great community partner and give back to those great organizations who are doing good things. Hard Rock, being new to this market, was certainly something we wanted to make sure that our community partners felt that was important to the company. While Hard Rock might be new, many members of my team are either from the region, still live in the region, or are transplants in. And certainly we very important to them to continue to be involved, to give back. Many members of my team sit on boards, participate with organizations on a continuous basis, something they want to do, not anything that we're forcing them to do. So this is just another one of our ways of being able to help a great organization in the area. Captain Amanda and her team are doing wonderful things here. We want to be a part of that.
And before we started our conversation, now we were talking briefly about how the entertainment business, of course, the pandemic has still kind of messed things up here. But I know that the Hard Rock Casino is making plans to be able to boost things back up when the public safety allows. Will you fill us in on what some of the plans are to get to the entertainment segment of the casino, which had been talked about, of course, at the opening?
Sure. You know, when we opened in mid-May, things were certainly different from a pandemic perspective. Our entertainment venue wasn't ready, and certainly nobody was doing entertainment. Since that point in time, you know, things started to get better, and we started to get the room ready. Now with the Delta variant obviously playing a role in the pandemic and causing some additional spike in cases around the country, we're being a little cautious from that perspective. We're in a lot of discussions and negotiations with talent, entertainers to get into there, but we're just holding off initially on getting them confirmed to specific dates till we kind of see how things pan out over the next 4 to 8 weeks.
I would imagine you're certainly hoping that things will abate enough so that you have some entertainers come in and put on performances here around Thanksgiving or Christmas, I would hope.
Absolutely, and currently we're doing entertainment on Fridays and Saturdays at one of our smaller stages. At our Hard Rock Cafe has a small stage, so we're doing some local bands, local Chicago area bands. They've been playing since we've opened. But certainly would love to be able to get the Hard Rock Live venue open and live as we head into the holiday season, that's for sure.
Okay. As we look to the rest of 2021 and go into 2022, are there any other plans? We know that there are more phases to the facility, I guess going into the lodging and the like, mm-hmm. aside from the casino and the restaurants.
Yeah, we are finalizing plans to launch our sports book. We did not open a sports book when we opened back in mid-May, so we hope to have an announcement on that in the next couple of weeks to get that open, hopefully late third, early fourth quarter. And then, we'll hopefully start talking about planning for phase two, which would include a hotel and a parking garage on site. And that would certainly complete, I think, the amenities that we have currently and be a great addition to the portfolio.
Well, that sounds like off to a good start, and the first part of the months here since the opening in May have gone well, and then just I guess keep plugging along, right?
Yep. Thanks. We look forward to great continuous improvement. Great team. I have to give them all the credit, but we're certainly glad to be doing as well as we're doing.
That's Matt Shuford. He's the general manager of Hard Rock Casino, Northern Indiana, in Gary. This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversations to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
So one of the hard things about being bisexual is that it's kind of hard to figure out for yourself growing up. I know a lot of gay friends of mine have said they knew very early on, And I guess that makes sense. If I look back, if I recollect, I can see signs of it. But at the time, it was really hard to think about because, maybe I really thought some Disney princesses were absolutely beautiful, but the princes were really cute too. And it's easy to kind of ignore that weird section when you've got the normal section over here. Normal, obviously, is subjective. My mom really struggled with it. She had a really hard time. And not because she felt like it was inherently wrong, although she did have some issues with that, I remember. Like, she was like, well, why? I don't understand. Why can't you just pick one and just stay that one? Because it was hard for her to wrap her head around. And I was like, it's just not that way. Like, I can't just pick. It's not an active choice. And of course, I was like really frustrated because I didn't know how to articulate it to her. And then she said, well, why wouldn't you just choose to only be with men because it's so much easier? I can see why you would tell someone who's bisexual it would just be easier for you if you only dated men. Because obviously I have the capacity to do that. I do. If I decided, well, I like both, but I should really only date men because that's more socially acceptable. Technically speaking, I could do that. What's hard to explain is it just feels like lying to yourself in a way that I don't know is easy to explain. It's like you've got something inside you, like half of you, and you're just not telling people about it. And not only that, you're kind of like trying to pretend it's not there. But you know it's there. It's surprising that the gay community is so judgmental and harsh on the bisexual community. I hear it all the time. And I hear it more from the gay people than from the straight people. For whatever reason, straight people are more willing to accept that you could be attracted to both genders. But gay people will say, oh, it's just someone who's gay and they don't want to admit they're gay. So, like, they talk about it like it's an in-between stage. Kind of in a condescending sort of way, where it's like, oh, you think that now, but you'll come over here eventually. To me, the word gay covers gay men and then lesbians, and it doesn't cover anything else. I think the word queer is like a blanket. It's a nice blanket. We can all crawl under it. If you said, oh, you know, it's queer week, I'd be like, hey, that's me.
You can find more regional stories at welcomeprojectoneword.valpo.edu. This is Regionally Speaking. Save the Dunes is an organization that is very, very concerned about the state of the environment here in Northwest Indiana. And they're also concerned with making sure that nature is alive and well in places that you wouldn't expect to see it. And with us to talk about the events coming up in September with Save the Dunes, we have Executive Director Natalie Johnson with us. Natalie, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Chris. It's good to be here.
Well, let's talk about the important public meeting coming up virtually, but still it's an opportunity for citizens here in Northwest Indiana to keep an eye on the environmental problems that pop up from time to time. In particular, there's a special public hearing coming up on September 1st that the Indiana Department of Environmental Management is putting on that you should know about. Tell us about the situation that we are watching closely with Cleveland Cliffs, that of course used to be ArcelorMittal.
Certainly. And since 1952, Save the Dunes has been committed to protecting and advocating for the Indiana Dunes, Lake Michigan, and surrounding natural areas, not only for the better of the environment, but also for the people who live, work, and play in Northwest Indiana. And if we remember back in 2019, we faced a really horrible situation of a cyanide and ammonia spill happening at the ArcelorMittal plant. And it's something that went unbeknownst to the public for multiple days and is really an example of how we, the public, need to be watching and part of the public comment process when it comes to what is happening in our waterways and what is coming from the industry. So right now, Cleveland Cliffs, we know they're kind of a new player in the region, and they have their permit. It's we call it a NPDES permit, the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit, which basically gives them the opportunity to discharge certain amounts of pollutants into the water. I know that may sound counterintuitive, but it's something that all of these facilities have. However, it's something that we as the public have a say in. And so this permit hearing, which is coming up on September 1st, 6 o'clock, is our opportunity to call in, participate in this virtual public hearing, and basically say, you know, okay, this is how we feel about pollutants coming from this facility. We want to make sure that the Indiana Department of Environmental Management is monitoring them as closely as possible, and we want to do everything at all possible to ensure that something such as a spill that happened to the previous owners doesn't happen from this facility again. So we are encouraging all people, you know, participate. Please call in. It's virtual, like I said, 6 p.m., and we'll be putting that information up on our website. Mm-hmm. It's already up on our Facebook right now. And if you have questions in advance, I will say that Cleveland Cliffs has been very willing to sit down and talk to us at Save the Dunes, so we have some inside information there. But this is something worth talking about. We as a community need to make sure that we are safeguarding our waters as much as possible for both the environment and the people.
We should note that you can go online, and as you mentioned, the information will be up with Save the Dunes soon as to how to participate in this virtual public meeting. Now, there's the deadline. I guess you have a chance. If you're unable to participate in the actual public hearing, you can still speak out and make sure that your comments are on record.
And that is, yes, that opportunity is open through September 16th. All these comments are being accepted by the Indiana Department of Environmental Management, where they review and they build in the public comment into what these permits look like. So again, something that we help shape and something that we just want to make sure as an environmental organization and all of your listeners, as a community, that the Indiana Department of Environmental Management is watching this as closely as possible, and that Cleveland Cliffs also knows that, you know, we are taking note of what's coming from their facility, and we are interested in how we can continue to safeguard these waterways, especially those that are flowing through our national park.
Another important deadline coming up is October 1st, but something different and something that folks in Northwest Indiana will definitely want to know about. The Indiana Dunes National Park is making some plans to make some changes. They are, for the first time, considering entrance fees and some campsite fees. Will you fill us in on how that fits in with Save the Dunes and what citizens should know about that?
Certainly, Chris. And so this is something that isn't it's not different from other parks. We have, for a very long time, had a wonderful national park, you know, formerly National Lakeshore, that we haven't had to pay fees for. However, it has been something that's been on the back burner for quite some time. We now, within the last several years, due to the name change, we went from a lakeshore to a national park. In many cases, that put us in the more visitors' guides and brought in the tourists, but there were no new monies that came with that name change. And that's a misconception that seems to be out there. So suddenly we're more so on the map nationally than what we may have been previously. And then in addition to that, COVID has certainly played a role where more people are experiencing the outdoors more than ever. So our resource, our national park, is experiencing a tremendous increase in visitorship, and even before those two instances, the resource was already, well, not getting the money from the federal government that we would like to see. So we fast forward to today, where there is this tough conversation that the park is navigating about whether or not to charge an entrance fee that would then help sustain these assets, both the environment itself and the stewardship of that environment, and then, of course, the facilities that people enjoy. So it's something that right now we're encouraging people to also participate in the public comment process, which the National Park Service is taking comments by email or online at parkplanning.nps.gov and are accepting comments through October 1st. And so thinking about this is, again, a tough decision. We at Save the Dunes, we want people to comment first. We're going to be talking to the park about, you know, what's fair for our region. But it is something that we are very well aware that our park does need the resources in order to stay this beautiful asset that we have in the region for this generation and the next.
Let's cover a couple of the upcoming events here. We'll have a chance to get back again here before some other events that Save the Dunes is sponsoring. But a couple of events coming up that people should know about. First off, it's the Outdoor Adventure Festival on the Little Calumet River. That's on September 12th. And also on that day, on September 12th, is the Monarch Music Fest. Natalie, will you give us an idea of what these two events are about? And we'll cover some others as we get back together again here in September.
Certainly. So maybe public comment isn't your thing and you just want to get outdoors. Mm-hmm. And so with the Outdoor Adventure Festival, that is, you know, in partnership with the National Park and a number of other partnering organizations. But particularly on September 12th at 11 until 3, there is an opportunity to go paddling in Portage on the east branch of the Little Calumet River. And so there are a number of boats that are reservable. I've heard that maybe down to the last of the last. So if you have time today, hop on Facebook. You will see that event on our Save Dunes Facebook page and be able to reserve a free boat there to be able to join into that paddle. Or if you have your own, still sign up and bring it out. But that is your opportunity to get on this wonderful waterway. And it's an area that we're very proud of as an organization because we have been helping with a number of partners help restore and open that river so people can paddle it and can enjoy it. Monarch Music Festival. So, hey, maybe afterwards you're really feeling like you need to grab a beer, get some food in you, and listen to some good music. Or you just feel like partying and dancing. Well, we've got you covered on that because on September 12th in Michigan City, at the Brewery Lodge and Supper Club from 1 to 5. We are holding a small festival that we are going to be having people come out and just celebrate through good music and good food the flight of the Monarch, which is what's getting ready to happen. The Monarchs are actually getting ready to take on a huge migration down to Mexico, and in an effort to raise awareness for the pollinators while also raising some critical funding to support their habitat, which is one of the other projects that our organization is working on, we are asking people to come out, have a beer with us, have some good, you know, a good time celebrating the music, celebrating the Monarch butterfly, and you can't do it at a better place than the Brewery Lodge and Supper Club.
That's right. Well, you can check out all of these events that coming up in the month of September by going online to the Save the Dunes website. And Natalie Johnson, the Executive Director of Save the Dunes, thank you for spending time with us today. We'll have you back again here as we get closer to more events coming up with the Save the Dunes. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Chris.
You're welcome. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back with you tomorrow.